Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And good afternoon and welcome, everyone. My first guest today wants to know, what is standing between you and a healthier, more fulfilling life? He calls himself the reluctant healer, yet he's dedicated his life to helping people healing. That is his life's purpose. So we're going to find out more from him in just one second. Coming later in the show, it's been said that animals show us in dreams what we need to do to heal ourselves and the earth. We'll be talking with eco-psychologist Valerie Harms about her latest work in dreaming of animals. Interesting perspective. First, I'd like to welcome David Elliott to the show. He went from a farm in Kentucky to Los Angeles to become an actor. He was surrounded by what he then thought of as New Age crazes. So how did he end up becoming a healer and dedicating his life to this? Let's bring him on and find out. He's the author of Healing. David Elliott, welcome to the show.
Well, hi, Vicki. I'm glad to be with you.
So you have an interesting journey, David. You do call yourself the reluctant healer. Your website is thereluctanthealer.com. So let's take a look at, you grew up on a farm in Kentucky. You grew up a Catholic. well, tell us a little bit about your journey.
Well, that probably says it all in a nutshell. But yeah, farm boy, grew up on a 2,000-acre farm in Kentucky, working very hard. By the time I was 18, I gladly took my father's advice about going to college. I figured it was time to have a little bit of a break. And, you know, once I finished college, I wasn't clear on what I was wanting to do, but I was fairly certain it wasn't going back to farm life. And I had an uncle, great uncle, who said, come on, let me take you out west. I believe you should, go to California. And, you know, a bunch of seeds got planted there. His grandkids immediately started in with me about, you're an actor. You should be an actor. You should be an actor. And I didn't know what that meant, but it kept creeping into my space. And eventually I found that there was something about acting that interested me. And as I pursued that, it became a real spiritual journey because of how much it taught me about myself.
So you are in Los Angeles,
yes.
You know, which I used to live down there. We used to call it Holly Weird down there. and you're surrounded by people who are truly off the wall, and then some people who truly believe in what they're doing, and some regular folk too. So how did this healing start coming to you? It started coming to you very gradually, as I understand it.
Yeah. I mean, of course, hindsight's 20/20, and if I reflect back to my childhood, I realize now that a lot of the things that started speeding up and getting stronger when I got to Los Angeles had been happening to me earlier in my life. But once I officially was living in Los Angeles, and the reason why you mentioned earlier about the New Age crazies or whatever, after being here a short time, I started having strangers come up and grab me on the streets and in airplanes and in stores, and they would all tell me the same thing: "You're a healer. It's you. I found you." And I mean, after two or three times of that, I did think, "Is it these people? What is this? This is really strange." And of course, my ego always wanted it to be something about acting, and there were a number of commercials and things I had been in and a couple of TV shows, and it was never about acting. It was always this thing about healing, and people would, you know, dig in their purse and pull out a tape or a card or something that they had information written on, and, you know, it was these strange stories about how they were sent to find me. And I was very skeptical about it, and, you know, gosh, skeptical isn't even the right word. I guess dumbfounded,
right.
You know. But I said, one day I looked up at the sky and said, okay, God, you need to send me some answers. And one of my best friends called me and said, hey, right after that, a few minutes after that, she called me and said, hey, I just met this healer. You got to meet this guy. And I said, I must need to meet him. I need to find out what a healer is. And long story short, I met the guy. His first thing he said to me was, hello, brother, we meet again. And I rolled my eyes and thought, oh, gosh, here we go. And he's like, oh, yeah, I've known you many lifetimes. You're a healer. I said, I don't know what a healer is, and I don't know what you're talking about. And he laughed, and he said, well, you've been doing healing work with people many lifetimes. As a matter of fact, you showed me a healing technique a few thousand years ago in India, and now I'm going to show it to you. I'm not here to teach you anything. I'm just here to help you remember. And I had a hard time digesting that, but he did show me this pranayama breathing meditation, and something happened to me that first day with that, and I started feeling electrical energy moving through my whole body and nervous system so strong that I thought I was levitating when I was doing this meditation. And needless to say, it really got my attention, and it started, well, that vibration I felt never turned off.
Mm-hmm.
So 20-some years later, I'm still vibrating like that.
And I was going to say, you've been doing this for the past 20 years now, but that's
yeah.
why you call yourself the reluctant healer, because in the beginning it was
yeah.
it was new to you too.
Oh my gosh, yeah, and he had a big flamboyant personality, and it seemed like he knew all these answers to everything. And he told me, he said, your gift is much different than mine. He said, you innately have this gift known as clairaudience. You have a gift of hearing, and it's through the throat chakra. He said, I have a different gift, but I do a lot more with my personality. He said, you don't need to. And, I just didn't really know how to understand what he was talking about, because he seemed so certain about it. And I was not only uncertain about it, I was pretty set on being an actor. So there was a lot of reluctance about mm-hmm. it in the beginning.
Yeah, you say in the beginning of the book, David, that most people don't develop the discipline around getting to know their essence. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
They think it's too much effort, but you believe it's paramount for us to do that if we're to complete our karma for this life. I wonder if you talk a little about that.
Yeah, I ended up just teaching a class about that all this last weekend. You know, there's the things that we are born into, our families, and all the, I guess we could say, scar tissue of hurts and pains that happen to us in our life. It seems that at a certain point, most people will start to wonder about their life, like, is this it? What am I doing? What am I here to do? What's this life about? And in that place, I find that to me is when the person's spirit is trying to get their attention. And through that process, if you can embrace your spirit, if you can embrace your essence, if you can start to connect beyond the mind and the ego and the emotions into maybe the purpose for this life, things can start to get a lot easier. For me, it's been such that by saying, okay, I'll go along with this, I'll see what this healing thing is about, I never have to worry about things. There's always an energy flow. There's always a lot of affirmation from the universe that this is what I'm meant to be doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is for me, there's something very measurable about it. Now, I tend to recognize many things in nature more as a positive sign than what I hear people saying. So when I'm feeling very connected and maybe feeling a real strong flow of love and energy through my heart and my body, you know, there's a whole dance with specifically hummingbirds and lots of animals here in my backyard in Los Angeles that's a constant display. I always say it's kind of like a Walt Disney movie.
I want to go live there.
Yeah, but it also happens wherever I go. So if I'm working in New York City, a lot of times there will be hawks flying around the building I'm working in, or in Chicago, or wherever it is. So nature is a real strong barometer for me that, you know, the energy's flowing right, that I'm in the right place, that you know, what I call spirit, many people, I guess there could be a lot of different names for it.
Right, right.
You know, some people might call it light. Some people may call it God. Some people may call it universal energy flow. I really work at trying to create some basic understandings that help people bridge into a place of spiritual understanding, no matter what their religious beliefs are or cultural beliefs are.
Okay. And I know nature is very, very important to you. We're going to take a quick break. I want to come back,
okay,
David. I want to look at the book that you've put together here.
Okay.
You talk about how to tap into the universal energy flow, and you believe that energy is at the heart of all creation, and that power of love is the way to healing. So I want to get deeper into that when we come back. You're listening,
okay,
to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and my guest in this segment is healer David Elliott.
She's giving me the excitations. I'm backing up.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
We all want to feel good, and when we look good, we just feel better. Hi, I'm Shawn Dene, inviting you to join Dr. Dawn and myself on Radiant You Radio. We will explore the good, the bad, and the ugly about looking fine. We'll throw the spotlight onto procedures, treatments, and nutritional methods to help you become a more radiant you.
Don't miss Radiant You Radio every Friday at 2 p.m. right here on Alternative Talk 1150.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to help you heal and stay healthy.
Like what you hear? Be sure and support the sponsors who support your favorite programs on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back. We're talking all about healing today. My second guest will be talking about how we need animals to help heal us and the planet. My first guest, David Elliott, is a teacher, a spiritual healer. How do you describe yourself, David? You do so many different things. I noticed you do workshops. You have a book.
You know, I never really think about describing myself, because it seems like other people do a better job of it than me. But I usually go from anything from, you know, a teacher, an author, a healer. Sometimes when I don't want to talk a lot, I may say I work for the IRS, you know.
I'll have to remember that one. It's a good one.
Well, on airplanes, sometimes that's, yeah.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about the book that you've written. It's called Healing. Now, this is really key, I think, because you believe so much in the work that you do. The book is for sale through the usual channels, but you also offer an electronic version for free on your website because you believe so much in this work. You start out talking about the book's in five sections. The first section you call The Crucible. Tell us why you call it The Crucible.
Well, I was advised by a few editors that maybe that wasn't the best description for it. But to me, it's kind of like the melting pot of you know, so much of the stuff that makes up you know, the human being, and so many of the places where we can get stuck and all that. It's kind of the grittier part of it. So I looked at it as, you know, if we can get you through the crucible part, we can get the understanding in there, we can really have something nice come out the other side, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and you start there, the very first thing you start with when we're trying to begin our process of healing is a place of self-love. You
yeah.
talk about self-love versus no self-love.
Right.
Talk about this a little. You actually gave a great story in the book, which I thought was really interesting. You talked about Gary. He's a 55-year-old psychologist. He came to you complaining. He just has no love in his life at all. He felt he was very open. He felt he was lovable. He was available to relationships. You told him he wasn't available as he thought, which shocked him. He disagreed with you, but by the end, he realized what you were talking about. I wonder if you could just share the premise of that story with us.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, to me, the whole nugget to it is this connection to love inside of ourself. I mean, I'm using the word self-love. We could maybe use unconditional love, universal love. If you have that connection inside yourself, then it provides this pathway to connect to everything in the universe. So in Gary's case, you know, seemingly maybe because of all the work and psychological understanding that he had, you know, he felt like he was the perfect specimen for a relationship because of what he knew intellectually, but really didn't have the connection to love inside of himself. He was constantly seeking it outside, and really how he most of the time chose to feel about himself was based on what he was having reflected to him from the outside. Like, in other words, if people were being attracted to him or were being interested in him, his self-esteem would be high. If there was nothing going on, he would be kind of depressed and a little bit bitter at God or the universe for feeling like, you know, he was being left out. And so when I said, you know, actually, you're not as in touch with love as you think you are, he, you know, got rather offended by that. And I had to keep working to show him that he was looking outside and was going to feel good about himself ultimately when he was in a relationship and somebody was loving him. That's what he was waiting for.
Mm. And yet he's psychologist here, and he didn't realize that for himself. It's hard to look at ourselves. It just shows it's hard to look at ourselves sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I know he's a great psychologist, but it's amazing how much that blind spot was there for him and how much energy he had around it. And I had to keep showing him that it was literally, I kept telling him, hey, you have a chip on your shoulder, and that's even working as a force pushing away what you think you deserve so much because you feel like it's not being brought to you. And to get him to realize it and feel it and form that relationship inside, it took a little while.
Mm. So you talk about some of the grittier aspects of being human. You're very blunt about some of our not so nice traits that we have when we tend to be in a place of no self-love. One
right.
of those you called is being extreme.
Mm-hmm.
You say this is so important for us to trust in the universal energy flow because there's no need for us to be extreme once we have that connection. I wonder if you'd talk a little about some of the grittier aspects of our no self-love personas.
Yeah, I mean, at the root of healing and health and well-being, it's like a circle. So if we have that connection inside and we feel through that connection to love that we're able to see love externally in the world everywhere and experience it and have a flow, like a circle going out and coming back to us, there's a completion. However, if you're waiting and looking outside for it and feeling empty inside, then I find that's the root of the negative emotions, the sadness, fear, and anger. And so through those negative emotions, when those are building in people, maybe if we talk for a moment about society in general, it mm-hmm. would seem to me that, you know, there's just better and better forms of distraction and satiation of appetites externally, you know, as we're growing more and more as a technological society. And people would, you know, not everywhere, but as a whole, would seem to be straying farther and farther away from this deeper connection inside, almost intentionally because of that gap and not knowing how to bridge that.
Right. Now, you talk about getting unstuck and unblocked. We need to get unstuck and blocked before we can move forward. Sometimes that stuckness is buried so deep within us, we're not conscious of it. So how do you start working with somebody to uncover that?
Well, the primary way was back to that guy, Tim, that came to me and said, I'm going to show you this healing meditation. So I work teaching people how to get in touch with their energy. In the beginning, oftentimes we're using a pranayama breathing meditation to, first of all, the number one priority with it is to get people to relax and stop thinking so much and to come into the moment more in a form of meditation. And through that, as that happens, people will start to feel energy, you know, incredibly strong. And the energy is it's almost like a very strong feeling of goosebumps that you feel moving through you. And when that's happening, I find on that sensation, the spirit, I see the spirit and hear it and feel it as an electrical vibration. So as we encourage the person to just connect and feel their spirit, it's an experience. And it's something that most people never forget. I mean, it's mm-hmm. when you experience it, it's like coming home. It's not. It's very basic, and there's something about it. It's just like the times in your life where you do get goosebumps, mm-hmm. and it kind of like straightens your spine, or the hair stand up on your neck, and you're like, you know, you're at least in the presence of some truth or some resonance that something deeper is going on beyond the third dimension. This is kind of what happens in the healing work and the meditation, is we're teaching people how to get in touch with their energy. As we do that, then they start to become their own healer, therefore putting me gladly out of a job, because I want people to be empowered and to know that they can heal themselves and that they can tap into this universal energy flow and consciousness to do the work themselves.
Yeah, you have a couple of chapters dedicated to that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how serious you are about helping people to become their own healers. I am, and you say also in the book, that you're continually amazed at how long self-destructive behavior can persist in someone, even when they know it's there and they're doing it to themselves. You say a reporter once asked you, why don't people heal? And you said it's because they get addicted to the attention about their story of pain and abuse. How do we start to change that story?
Sometimes you need it pointed out to you that, hey, you're stuck in the story and you're allowing yourself to stay in the place of being a victim. Now, as uncomfortable as that discussion can be with people, sometimes it's exactly what they need to hear, because in choosing to be a victim and not change the way you are, you can access energy that way. You can get attention just the way people tell their story. Sometimes they just need to know, hey, you're going into an automatic place here. You've told this story 100, 1,000 times, and you get the same sort of sympathy and understanding and compassion from many people. But if you're going to change, now you have to change the understanding of what that story is about and why you attracted it to you.
It's very easy to get stuck in that state of telling that story because even though something may have happened many years ago, you meet new people, they'll say, oh, what happened in that situation? And you keep repeating it. It is very hard sometimes to just step away from it.
It is, because as humans, people tend to be able to connect much more easily through their pain and the suffering than the good stuff, you know, the enlightening stuff. So it's a little tricky, but, you know, when people become more and more conscious about it, they become very aware every time they sink into that story.
Right. Oh, here I go again, telling that same old story.
Yeah, and when somebody doesn't respond how you want them to, what happens then? You know, if somebody doesn't seem to care or they don't have the kind of, you know, sympathy that you're looking for. So it's a delicate dance of being able to communicate to people about, you know, about that. But I also feel like it's a very important one.
Now, we said at the beginning that your whole premise starts with self-love. How to do it right? That's the big question. And I wonder if we can share your prescription with our listeners. You say, I know your prescription is that I know I'm a good person in my heart. I do not give my ability to love away to another person. One of the primary ways you connect the universe and own inner love is through nature. And you connect, you have play and fun. You say play and fun nourish your loving spirit and unleash your feelings of love and joy. How did you arrive at that prescription if somebody is looking at writing their own prescription?
Well, I kind of just looked back and tried to make it as simple and as practical about what how I choose to be in each moment. And the one thing I've tried to relay to people forever has been that I know I was born with a good feeling inside my heart. That's always been a basis.
I can feel that from you, David.
Yeah. And to me, that compassion and that willingness to give that to other people and to see that in other people is one of my starting points, because truly I see us all as being the same, no matter what we want to present as why we're different. I choose to see the similarity in all of us, you know? And then, you know, from there, kind of what we do with it, I know that two of the shortcuts to healing and being able to maintain an atmosphere of love is to be grateful and to be expressing using my creativity. If that's happening, it opens the whole world up inside of me. And nature, maybe if we wanted to even see, you know, I guess I could say angels or helper spirits, they seem to come. The more open my heart is and the more accepting I am of everything, then, again, the more this Walt Disney dance is happening in front of me and around me all the time, because it would seem to me that when I'm most open and flowing with love, nature it feels very safe with that and curious about that and comes to not only explore it, but maybe that's their own resonance too. And I think when we're in our human preoccupied state, you know, maybe we're not so safe for nature to be around, you know.
Right. I think nature's such a powerful thing. I love to be out in nature too. 20 years later, you were the reluctant healer. You've dedicated the last 20 years to healing. What do you wish you know? What do you know now that you wish you knew back 20 years ago?
I guess that I know the one prerequisite that I put on all of this 20 years ago was that if I was going to do it and continue to do it, that I had to have fun at it. And so any workshop, every day, that I'm around people doing work, I say my primary intention is that I have to be having fun. And I've realized the universe will support me in doing that, and the more fun I'm willing to have, the easier people are around me, no matter what their story is, no matter how much pain they're in. If we can get them to relax and feel safe and feel seen and heard, then they can start to open up. And as they open up and we help them connect to their spirit and their essence, the universe is who has the agenda with people, in my opinion, and what it is that they're here to do and what they need to do to heal. So if I can just help open that door and facilitate that, then, you know, I'm a good midwife, maybe.
There you go. And I want to reiterate, play and have fun with it, too. David Elliott, it's been great talking with you.
Yes.
Now, your book is called Healing. It is for sale. If somebody would like a free download of it from the off your website, it is possible to get that. So would David Elliott -healing.com is where they can get the free book, correct?
Yes.
Okay, David Elliott, and Elliott has two L's and two T's, davidelliott-healing.com. And the other website of yours is?
TheReluctantHealer.com.
Great. Thank you for being with us today, David. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Vicki. I really had a good time.
Good.
Okay.
My guest again, David Elliott, TheReluctantHealer.com is where you can find his website. And that links to the other, where you can get the free download of his book called Healing. So please stay with us. When we come back, we'll be talking with Valerie Hans. She is a naturalist and eco-psychologist. She was the science editor at the National Audubon Society. And she's going to talk to us about her latest work, which is called Dreaming of Animals, Dialogue Between Self and World. Please stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
I spend my days in a dreamy haze, thinking of what to do. When the sun comes down, night is all around. I shed my skin, treading on new ground. Go to a place.
Do you have legal questions? Need to know where to turn?
Hi, this is Rick Gregrick, your host of Northwest Legal Compass.
Northwest Legal Compass will address your questions on a variety of legal topics, including estate planning, asset protection, real estate and business planning, and more. The legal and accounting staff of Gregrick and Associates are dedicated to providing you with superior legal and tax services. Their integrated counsel is geared to the achievement of your goals.
Visit us on the web at rjglegal.com.
Be sure and tune in every Friday at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150. Intuitive dream coach Joyce Chapman says there are no little dreams, that every desire is important, and that you deserve life to its fullest. As a dream activist, Joyce has helped thousands of people gain clarity about their lives and make positive changes. She can help you too. See more information at joycechapman.com. And if you have a question for Joyce regarding your dream, email joyce@joycechapman.com.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicki St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicki asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune into our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to brighten your day.
Notice anything different? You should. There's no other station like Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Dreaming of another world. Dreaming of another world. Dreaming of another world.
And welcome back, everyone. We're talking about healing today, and Valerie Harms is my next guest. She's an ardent naturalist and eco-psychologist. She was the science editor at the National Audubon Society in New York City with the purpose of educating the public about ecological issues. She's the author of 9 books in various genres, including the environment and psychology, And she's the author of National Audubon Society Almanac of the Environment, The Ecology of Everyday Life. Her most recent book is called Dreaming of Animals, Dialogue Between Self and World. Valerie, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Becky.
We were talking before the show and you said we've done several shows. You noticed we've done several shows on animals, which is true, but this is a whole different take here. Tell us a little bit about your book and why you thought this was important work.
Well, when I had been at Audubon and working on that almanac, I had done a lot of research about habitat issues and the species and extinction of species, and I became very concerned with that. You know, E.O. Wilson, who's very famous, had said that if we don't stem the tide of the extinction rate by 2020, we'll lose 50% of the species that we have on Earth. And we need a wide diversity of species in order to have a healthy planet. So I wanted to do a more heart-oriented take on the subject, and that's why I focused on the big popular animals like bears and wolves and snakes and insects, including farm animals and pets. But I wanted to really show what their biological needs were and what their history culturally was, and then have a section in each chapter on the interpretation of dreams in which they appeared.
Yeah, interesting. And for your research on this, I mean, you traveled all over the place. You went to Hawaii, Mexico, Costa Rica, Ecuador,
right.
Bali, Spain, Morocco.
Right.
You wanted to see how the animals are treated there. Is that why you went to those countries?
Yes. And, you know, one of the interesting things was, for instance, in Costa Rica and in other places, farms are built like a courtyard, instead of like the way they are in our country. And the animals live, the farm animals live very close to the people's homes. They're considered part of the homestead.
Mm-hmm. That's true. When I have my horse, it was a courtyard, and the stables were built around the courtyard, and the farmhouse was the other side of the courtyard.
Of course, we've moved one step closer with our pets. We have them sleeping in our beds.
So in each of these chapters, you broke the book down into sections talking about wild animals and domesticated animals.
Mm-hmm.
And in each chapter, as you said, you talked a little bit about each animal, why it might be important to our environment, and also some of the dreams that it means. And I said before the show, you didn't have my dream in here because I dream about sharks and whales all the time. So I want to find out what that means, and then we'll go more into the book here.
Okay, well,
because I dream about sharks and whales. Those are the only animals I dream about.
Well, that is fascinating. And if you go to the fish chapter, whales are mammals. But anyway, aside from all that, they're water animals, and they are very flowing, and the sharks and whales are very large, and I would think that would be akin to your influence, you know, the fact that you're a large personality, and that a lot of your work is dependent on flow among people. Isn't
mm-hmm.
that true?
Oh, that's very true. That's very true.
Yeah.
And it's very true, actually, because in my dream, they're always flowing the same way. They're always flowing the same way.
Well, in the book, I have an example of when you're lovers and you dream that you cut up the fish to dissect it instead of letting it flow between you. You can see how the communication needs to be allowed to just happen rather than to cut it up and analyze it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take a look at another one of my favorite animals. I love bears. I love wolves. Let's take a look at bears and wolves.
Okay.
Two separate chapters here. But why did you start with bears? Why are bears so significant to our system?
Well, they are very large, and they're the biggest teachers of mankind. Their ancestors go back about 20 million years, and they at one point were called grandfather, honey paws. And from watching bears, people learned how to dig for roots and berries and respected them in that way. And they were also, of course, the source of tremendous feasts for people.
Mm-hmm. So if somebody dreamt of bears a lot, what would that mean? I mean, you share a couple of dreams in the book about a woman who withdrew to a remote cabin in winter, and she said that after she started a journal, she dreamed about following bear tracks to a den.
Mm-hmm.
What's the significance of that?
Well, many of us in our lives need to take a respite and to have a little denning time. And I think that might be one aspect of it. This particular dream, she follows the bear tracks to a den, and she was afraid that the bear would kill her. And I think that is often the reaction to our dreams with bears or snakes. Or people have them, and then they are terrified of them. But that is a reflection of our alienation from these species. And when we become more in tune with our own power, we have much more friendly dreams. And this woman, when she started journaling about it, she became much more stirred. She became very moved and more powerful herself.
Interesting. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to ask you what eco-psychology is exactly and how it affects us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest in this segment is Valerie Harms, where her book is called Dreaming of Animals, Dialogue Between Self and World. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs in prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to brighten your day.
You're listening to the refreshingly different Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest in this segment is eco-psychologist and naturalist. She's the former science editor of the National Audubon Society. And her new book is called Dreaming of Animals, Dialogue Between Self and World, Valerie Harms. Valerie, I wanted to ask you what exactly eco-psychology means, how our psychology is affected by environmental conditions, and why animals are so important to that.
Okay. Ecology comes from a Greek word meaning home. And home would be the earth upon which we live. And psychology, of course, it concerns the emotional well-being of individuals. And eco-psychology came up among therapists when they were learning that their clients were getting depressed and frightened by what was all the different states of what was happening to the earth. You know, even things like this egg recall and these terrible floods and so on. Those affect individuals' lives and are not just they're not just accidents that happen on the earth. So eco-psychology is about the unity of being. And if I may, I would like just to describe one man's way of relating himself to the rest of the universe.
Yeah.
He makes a map, and he began with a dot to represent the divine within himself. And around that dot, he drew a small circle to represent himself. And then around that, he drew another circle to represent the interrelationship of mind, body, soul, and spirit. Then another circle to show how his existence was embedded in the context of other human beings, his family, friends, and neighborhood. And then another ring to show how he was related to other countries and plants and animals. And then also soil, rocks, water, air, and energy. And then finally he added one more circle around all of that and called it the realm of divine transcendence. And I just thought that was a very nice way of feeling the unity of being within oneself.
Definitely. Earlier you talked about fish. We mentioned that briefly. And I wanted to talk a little about fish because I think many of us can relate to bears and wolves and horses, and especially to domesticated animals like cats and, you know, cats and dogs. It's a little harder, I think, for most people to relate to fish.
Mm-hmm.
You have a chapter in the book on fish, and you talk about fish and relating to them. Talk a little about that, if you would.
Well, for one thing, we are related biologically to fish. When we are developing, when our fetuses are developing in the womb, they go through stages in which they develop bones, just like the primitive fish did. Primitive fish were the first vertebrates, and we have followed them. The sea is the home of fish, but our bodies contain mostly water, and so we also have that in common. And I think that you know, when, like you said, that you dream of sharks and whales,
right?
When you find yourself having a certain power animal or dreaming about a certain one more and more, it would be good to look into its specific biology and what are its qualities of being. And I think that then you'll be able to understand and correlate more what it means to you. And sometimes we have those dreams just to show us that this animal needs, what this animal needs for healing in the world itself. That's another example of sort of the ecological unconscious, the unity of ourselves and other beings. So we're all rooted in nature.
Mm. You talk in the book under the, I think it's under the section for salmon, controlling and remaking fish to meet our wants is the subheading of that chapter. And, you know, one of the things, I just recently went to Norway, which is absolutely stunning country and very wild in many ways. and we were sailing out in the middle of nowhere, and I suddenly would come see all these fish farms everywhere in the ocean, these circular units that they drop into the ocean to fish farm. What are your views on that?
Well, the big problem is that some of these domesticated fish will get loose and mate with the wild ones, and then we'll lose the quality of the wild ones. You know, even if the farm fish owners have good intentions, there are other people who might accidentally or deliberately release some of those domesticated fish into the wild. And that's a very common fear of what might happen with other animals too, not only salmon, but elk and so on. If we lose the wildness, we lose that genetic heritage. That's the big problem.
Yeah. I think what concerns me with fish farming in the ocean like that is they are feeding the animals the kind of food we don't want them to eat, the kind of food that the reason we buy wild food, fish. And that escapes into the ocean along with the farm fish excrement. So we're going to end up not having wild fish anymore because at some point we're going to get polluted. Everybody's going to be eating the same stuff. It's a concern for me anyway. So how do we as human beings work with the ecology and with animals to keep everything in balance? Because you talk a lot about how animals can be very healing to ourselves and to our planet. Mm-hmm. What do you want us to know, Valerie?
Well, aside from doing a little research on the animals that most interest you, I suggest meditating on them. Or sometimes if you have a problem, just go into a meditation and ask for an animal to appear that could help you with that problem. And it is amazing how an animal will appear. And when you go into that situation, whether it's a job interview or a conflict with a person, the qualities of that animal will infuse you. I remember once I did a self-portrait of myself and then was asked to become a certain animal and move around as it and then redo the self-portrait. And when I did it after becoming the animal, my portrait was much more vivid and expressive and had more energy, so I highly recommend that.
Mm.
And then I recommend keeping track of your thoughts and experiences and encounters with certain animals, and then from time to time doing a dialogue with them, as well as also keeping track of your dreams.
And with a dialogue, you say it's not enough just to speak our part. We have to make it a dialogue and speak the animal's part, too.
Well, if you get into a meditative place, you can tap into the energy of that animal, and you do speak for that animal. But the deeper a place you can get into, the more likely it will be very rewarding.
Mm.
It has its own authenticity.
Well, I thank you for being with us today. Really interesting perspective. It's kind of difficult to talk about because the book weaves through so many different aspects of what we need to know about the ecology and the environment and animals and how we interact together. What's the final thought would you like to leave our listeners with very quickly, Valerie?
Okay. I appreciate your knowledge and understanding, for one thing. My website is www.valeriehams.com. The book can be ordered anywhere, and I just appreciate the time.
You're very welcome. And if listeners go to your website, there's I found it somewhere. I don't quite know where it is right now. I've just lost it on my laptop. But there is a page there dedicated to helping them figure through their own dreams, correct?
Yeah.
So just you can go to ValerieHarms.com and you'll find that. And Valerie's book is called Dreaming of Animals, Dialogue Between Self and World. I want to thank each of you for joining us today. We'll be talking about healing again next week, but a whole different aspect of it next week. We hope you can join us for that. If you've got feedback on today's show, you can reach me at info@conversationslive.net or at 800-495-7617. Again, that's 800-495-7617. See you next week. Until then, live well, live strong. Thanks for being with us on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.